Welcome to the Midnight Society. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
And we're here to talk about ghost stories. True ghost stories. Things that have happened to us, things that we want to investigate, and things that have happened to you.
Email us your experiences at midnightsocietyae@gmail.com or leave us your firsthand story as a voicemail at 978-938-4BOO. Hello, everyone.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Midnight Society.
Yes, we're also glad to be back with you. We just returned from the infamous Lizzie Borden house.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. We are lucky to be alive, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, it was an eventful night. We didn't sleep a friggin' wink.
That's not true, actually. We kind of slept like babies.
And slept very well.
For those of you who don't know about the Lizzie Borden mystery, you maybe have at least heard the little nursery rhyme that goes like this. Lizzie Borden had an axe.
Gave her mother 40 whacks.
When she saw what she had done.
She gave her father 41.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So the Lizzie Borden house is the scene of a gruesome double murder that took place around the turn of the century. Couldn't tell you what year. I'm sure they told us on the tour.
1890-something, I think.
You have a better memory than me.
1891, something around that.
It's in, I would say, eastern Massachusetts, Fall River, Massachusetts.
Yeah, like southeast Massachusetts.
There you go.
It was an awesome trip. We want to tell you all about it today, and we also want to give you some insight into one of our very first ghost hunts. You know, we've done this once before, but I don't think it was quite as official as what we did this time. So we're going to give you a brief intro into who the Lizzie Borden family was, what happened with them.
Mm-hmm.
But then mostly we'll be spending our time talking about the ghost hunt and the results that we found.
Yes. Dun-dun-dun. So the Lizzie Borden double murders obviously centered on the Borden family. So just to give you a quick inventory of those people, we have Andrew Borden, the patriarch. By all reports that we've heard, he was kind of an asshole. He was a little cheap and very strict with his two daughters, Emma and Lizzie. We heard some stories about how they were extremely vocal about how they didn't like how he would let them go hang out with the kids and do what the kids do over at the department store and such. Wear the styles of the day. But so Andrew, patriarch, daughters, Lizzie and Emma. Emma's a little bit older. Both would grow up to be a little bit eccentric, and we'll get to that a little bit later.
Yeah.
Andrew's wife, Sarah, died when the girls were pretty young, and he remarried Abigail.
That's right. And Lizzie was around 3 years old when Sarah died, her mother. You know, one of the things that happened is Sarah kind of charged Emma, the older sister, to take care of Lizzie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so Lizzie actually, later on in life, when talking with people, would describe her relationship with Emma as more of a mother-daughter relationship than a sister relationship. And that made a lot of sense, and it really jives with the way that you hear people talk about the girl's relationship with their stepmother, Abigail. As soon as Andrew remarried, there began this feeling of strife that grew over time.
Lots of drama.
Real inheritance issue.
Yeah. It's also, you know, I've heard conflicting reports about him being miserly, you know, because he also funded a trip for Lizzie to go overseas.
It's true, to Europe. Yeah.
To Europe. So there's all sorts of mystery that surrounds this murder.
Yes.
This set of murders. So, all right, we've got Andrew the father. Abby, she is the second wife, so the stepmother. We've got Lizzie Borden and we've got Emma Borden. And then we've got two side characters that do come up. We've got Bridget. She's the maid. Side note, they insisted on calling her Maggie because that was the name of the last maid.
Dicks.
Total dicks. And then John Morse, Uncle John. And this is the brother of the first wife of Andrew. So no blood relation to Andrew the father.
Right. We're about to walk you through what we think is the most boiled down and distilled timeline of the Lizzie Borden murders. And the reason we're going to do it and we're going to abbreviate it is because we're not really here to talk about the murders.
There's another place you can go for that.
Yeah. I can stay sexy and not get murdered somewhere else.
Which, I mean, I am an avid listener. But we're talking about ghosts here today, yeah. Y'all.
But we have to say, you know, the Lizzie Borden house, as a little bit of a plug for them, they do a really good job walking you through this.
Amazing job.
They posit a timeline and a cause for the murders that I had never even thought of before, yeah, or heard of in any of the conspiracy theories that I'd read about. So it's
like a 2-hour tour. If you decide to stay there overnight, which I highly recommend that you guys do, they give you a complimentary 2-hour tour through each room, through the timeline. They go deep into it.
They show you crime scene photos in every spot that you're standing in.
Side note, this was the second crime scene photos in the history of crime scene photos to have ever happened.
It's true, yeah. And it was one of the first murders that was ever covered in transcontinental newspapers. Also, another side note, you can visit the Midnight Society AE's Instagram to see a photo of me laying exactly where Abigail Borden was murdered.
We took
exactly the way that
photos.
She was laying.
That's right. Crime scene photos reenacted.
Yes. If you want to hear a lot about waiting until everybody leaves the room to take a weird photo, you can talk to us later. So, okay. Timeline. Let's go through this.
This is going to be like the fastest timeline ever.
We don't have gas. We have wine.
Do you hear it? No, because I'm out of ice. That's right. We drink with ice. Okay. So, timeline is as follows. First of all, it's important to note that Emma, the older sister, is out of town.
Leading up to the murder, the first couple of days before the murder, the family all reported being physically ill. There was talk that they thought that they were being poisoned, and reportedly Abigail even walked across the street to her doctor to report being poisoned, and he reassured her that she was just a fool and that it was just food poisoning.
Food poisoning. Because remember, there's, like, I think ice boxes at this point.
Yeah,
there's
and it's the middle of summer at this point,
there's
too.
There's no
yeah.
real refrigeration. Uncle John has arrived somewhat unannounced. They had known he was going to come and visit, but they didn't know when exactly. So Uncle John, the night before the murders take place, shows up.
So this is the night of August 3rd. The next morning,
1892.
Bridget Sullivan, their maid, wakes up first, as maids are wont to do. Uncle John comes down next, followed by Abigail, then Andrew. Basically, everybody's just getting their day started.
Andrew lets Uncle John out the side door and then says, hey, why don't you come back for dinner? He was just, Uncle John was just heading off supposedly to check in with his niece that he hadn't seen for a while.
Bridget goes outside to vomit around 9 a.m.
Poor
she
Bridget.
Comes in and she sees Abigail dusting in the dining room. But she reports later on to the police that at that time at 9 a.m. she didn't see Andrew or Lizzie anywhere around.
So around the same time, around 9 a.m., Abby, the wife slash stepmother, goes up to Uncle John's room to start cleaning it up. So he had stayed in the guest room, and now she's going up there to kind of tidy up and turn it over. So she's up there dusting.
Because he's cleaning. A dirty boy.
That's right. He did not bring a change of clothing. He only had what he was wearing. And meanwhile, also Lizzie, I think, is up at this point, and she's starting to get linens from the basement because her task for the morning is to iron the napkins.
Tough life. So basically at that point, Andrew leaves to go about his day. The expectation at that time is that he's going to be out of the house for the majority of the day. Probably won't be returning until shortly before dinner.
And Bridget has been tasked to clean the windows, both inside and out. So she starts to get her stuff together, tells Lizzie, who she saw at the back door, to not lock her out. She's going out to the barn to kind of get some stuff and get ready to start washing and says, hey, don't lock me out of here while I'm out here scrubbing your goddamn windows like a
fucking maid.
Peasant.
Then, between 9 or 10 a.m., during that time, because Bridget is out there scrubbing the windows like a peasant until probably around, 10:45, in that time, Abigail's murdered.
And Lizzie is supposedly ironing. She claims that she was perhaps in the basement fetching more linens. So Bridget re-enters the home around 10:20. She's kind of done washing the exterior, and she's coming inside to start washing the interior of the windows. About 10 minutes later is when Andrew, the father, comes home from his errands.
The first weird thing that happens is that he can't get into his own house. The door is locked. The three locks were all applied to this door. So Andrew Borden is understandably frustrated. He's banging on the door.
Well, I think because one of them was broken. And they knew, like, the whole house knew one of them was broken. So the rule of thumb was, like, don't lock that one lock. If you're going to lock the doors, don't lock that one.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Andrew returns home. He's banging on the door. Bridget runs downstairs to let him in the door. While she's letting him in, you know, he's all huffing and puffing. She hears a giggle on the stairs behind her and turns around. It's Lizzie. We can't really speculate as to why she's giggling at this. It could just be that she's thinks it's funny that her dad was locked out of the house.
And that the maid is, like, struggling and...
Exactly. But it is important to note that at this point in time, 10:30 in the morning, that is where those three people are, and they all see each other.
So around 10:45, Lizzie starts her ironing. She's finally started her fucking tasks, apparently. or maybe she's kind of halfway through. It's unclear. Again, this is all kind of cobbled together from multiple sources.
Right.
But she's ironing, and Bridget has now finished up cleaning the interior windows. And Lizzie asks Bridget if, hey, Bridget, are you going to go check out that sale down at the department stores
Bridget's
today?
Bridget's like, well, basically, I've just been vomiting all morning, so I don't know, probably not. But Lizzie also, like, then still asks, are you going to go to the department store?
And she says, no, bitch, I'm going to go lay down in my creepy attic space. And then Lizzie claims that around the same time that this happens, she remembers that she's got a fishing trip that she's going on and that she needs to go check for some of her gear in the barn.
Which is what you do when you're ironing handkerchiefs.
So Lizzie claims that she's out at the barn, and as she comes back in through the side door and she enters the home,
she sees Andrew is dead.
A bloody fucking corpse.
Gross.
Like, basically lasagna.
FYI, we did see some crime scene photos. And yes, the axe went through his head many times.
And yes, there's a magnifying glass that you can use to investigate even closer.
But yeah, so basically she comes in the door. She'd have to be dense to not see it. She saw her father dead on the couch, and she yells up to Bridget, yo, Bridge, come on down. Somebody killed my dad.
So, you know, investigation continues. They end up arresting Lizzie for the murders because she's the only person they can say was actually in the house when
this
stuff
happened. Plus,
she's crazy. Plus, she may have been a little nutso. But she was never convicted.
It's true. And by all accounts involved, her story kept changing throughout the investigation, which admittedly worked against her. But there was also a doctor who was sort of doping her up with morphine to, like, prevent her from dissolving into hysterics at any given time. So Lizzie wasn't able to help her own defense at any given point. So it's kind of a miracle that she was acquitted twice of this crime.
So that, in a nutshell,
that was the quick and dirty.
That was the quick and dirty. There is lots of other places you can go to find out more about this. I read a book called The Borden Murders, Lizzie Borden and the Trial of the Century.
Mm-hmm.
By Sarah Miller. And there's also a great podcast. I'm blanking on the name right now, but I think if you just Google or look in your app that you use to listen to podcasts and type in Lizzie Borden, and you'll find a great one there.
Mm-hmm. And I watched an episode of the show Biography, which I think was kind of big in the late 90s, early 2000s. At least that's what it looked like when I watched it. but it was an episode of it called Lizzie Borden, A Woman Accused. And it really drew on the greatest resource you could find for empirical evidence for this crime and documentation of what went on, which is the Fall River Historical Society. If you're ever in that area and are looking for some primary sources regarding the Lizzie Borden trials or, you know, the documentation of the crime, go there. They have it all. Okay, so now that we've given you the timeline of what we think went on during the Lizzie Borden double murders, we want to tell you about our experience at the house, because that's really what this is all about. It's going to be one part what happened and one part how-tos for amateur investigators.
Right. We want to, you know, this is our first time really digging in.
It's our first time.
This was our first time doing this. So we thought, you know, we could share what we did with you guys. We are learning as we go.
Exactly. And we plan on having more similar investigations in the future. So you can learn and grow with us. You can experience our mistakes without the regret that we're feeling.
That's right. You can also learn from us without being up till like 3 a.m. like we have been trying to do these fucking things.
Yes. So we're going to start. We're going to let you know what we used, what we did, how we went about it, talk about our results, and then later on we'll let you know what we would do differently next time.
Yeah. So a couple of things we brought with us. I had a trail cam, so we set that up. It's motion activated and it has night vision on it. So we set that up so that, you know, if anything moved, it would hopefully grab a photo of that. Mm-hmm. We had a thermometer that it's one of those like thermometer guns that kind of lets you read the temperature while you sit in this.
It's a great substitute for a laser pointer if you have a cat.
Of course, we had the K2, and then we had a couple of voice recorders. I had a Evister. It's a voice-activated voice recorder, mm-hmm. which a lot of people in the ghost hunting world aren't fans of because you can very easily miss something. If it gets triggered, it doesn't always start the recording as soon as it hears a voice. But that is why we had two backup voice recorders, so that if we did pick up something that was picked up on the voice activated one, we could mm-hmm. maybe try to reference the other ones.
Yeah. So we'll give you a layout of our accommodations in a little bit, but suffice to say that this was literally as much material as we need to cover that space, because it was surprisingly a lot of space. And like Aaron said, we wanted some backups for recordings. We wanted to make sure that if we heard something on one thing, that we could corroborate it on another thing. So
that's right. So besides the Evister, I also have a Zoom Q3. This is left over from my husband. He's a musician, and so he uses this to record in his space, and it's got a crack in it. I just want to say for the record.
And we also have a really inexpensive Trust In hand recorder. I got this on Amazon and it was not expensive. So for any amateur sleuths out there, this is a good option because it's not voice activated, which in some ways doesn't feel as fancy. But on the other hand, it's really easy to use, very simple piece of machinery. So definitely recommend it.
The Evister, the voice activated one, was also from Amazon, and I think it cost like $25 or something like that. But the Zoom is a much more expensive piece of equipment, so we were lucky to just have had it.
But if you want to buy the one that Erin has with a crack in it, she could probably give it to you for short money.
Did we bring anything? Well, I have an app on my phone. You know, I'm sure it's totally legit. But it is called the TX1 Spirit Box. And I also have an app called iOvulus and the M2. All of these are things we also played around with. They're not all free apps. A couple of them, I think one of them was free, but some of the others you had to pay for.
That's why in the future we're going to be asking you for money to listen to this podcast.
If you want this to be good, we need better equipment.
But so something you can expect in the future is, you know, for every investigation that we do, you'll hear about our results that we get with these very empirical, machine-oriented tools. But we're also going to be testing out these weird little things like one-off apps that, you know, may or may not help give us some kind of result. Probably not, but maybe. So we'll let you know if they work.
Yeah. It was kind of fun using the iOvulus one because there were couple of responses that popped up in it that were relevant to the questions that we were asking at the time, and mm-hmm. it was being kind of funny too.
Yeah, there are some very glib ghosts in this house. FYI. Okay, so those are the tools that we brought, and obviously we'll talk more about those results later. So we already sort of touched on what kind of preparation we undertook. I think it's important just to note for anybody who's thinking about this that, like, you know, we read about all this stuff and a lot of them were theories, but it really had no bearing on our objectivity in terms of this investigation because we weren't investigating the murder. We were investigating the ghosts.
The ghosts.
Andrew and Abigail's bedroom, I have to say, is the nicest in the house.
That's right.
It's beautiful. It's got this like beautiful dark floral wallpaper. There is, once again, an auxiliary bedroom off the main bedroom, and it is also the only bedroom in the house that has its own bathroom. So kudos to us for investigating ghosts, but also taking a nice vacation. But yeah, so like I said, there's an auxiliary bedroom off the main one, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, but neither of us had a great feeling about that little bedroom.
Well, once the tour had ended, everyone else kind of gathered downstairs to chat up the tour guide and get her stories. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, Amanda and I were like, no.
No.
We're going to our room and starting our investigation.
We have business to attend to.
Yeah. So we went upstairs. We were like, this is perfect. Everyone's downstairs. It'll be quieter upstairs. So let's get started. Mm-hmm. So we were investigating for about 2 hours. The extent of the responses or the evidence that we got was actually pretty cool with the K2 meter.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So let's just start by going down the type of investigations because I think it's fun to really paint the picture. So the majority of what we were doing were EVP interviews accompanied by using the K2 meter. So basically us saying, talk to us, and then the thing lighting up a lot.
That's right. We did bring some trigger objects, or what we thought might be trigger objects.
Right.
I brought a photo of some intricately carved things because Andrew was he was a carpenter early in his life before mm-hmm. he became like a kind of real estate guy in the area. And then Lizzie was big into horses. Yes. So I brought photos of horses hoping that someone would react to something.
Right. And surprisingly, you know, I know we were in Andrew and Abigail's bedroom and that they were the two people murdered in this house, but nobody was murdered in that room. And by all accounts that you hear from the tour guide and online about the Lizzie Borden house, you always hear that it's haunted, but there's never any consensus on who's haunting it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some speculation that possibly Lizzie or Emma could have returned at some point. And there's also speculation that it could be Andrew and Abigail. It is important for our story to note that the most responses we received were when we were referencing Andrew and addressing him directly.
Yeah. And so we would just be asking him kind of general questions. I feel like that's something, and I know what I feel like that's something in the future I want to be better about. It's just like I tried to think about questions to ask Andrew, but in the moment, you're kind of in a dimly lit room, and totally. I'm like, I don't want to look at my list of questions, and I just want to ask, but now I'm blanking on what I want to ask this person.
Definitely. It was almost like an awkward job interview. That's totally. Probably the best way to describe it. You know, how do you ask questions when you're interested in the response, potentially interested in the response, but you're not getting a response?
Exactly.
It got exciting when we would record an interview for a couple of minutes, and then we would listen back. And we found out pretty quickly that the walls and the ceiling and floors were so thin that when people were moving around in the house and getting ready for bed and talking to one another, we could hear them. You will hear mostly Erin, because she's so vigilant, yelling out, toilet flushing, or somebody's going up the stairs.
Yeah, people talking in the hallway.
Yeah.
Also, just so y'all know, the Lizzie Borden house is in a pretty urban area.
Also true.
So we heard a lot of cars driving by, motorcycles that like just would not fucking stop revving their engines.
They were going so fast.
Yeah. So really where it got more interesting for us was we decided to take a break.
Yes.
And we went downstairs. We chatted with a few people. There was only one couple that was still awake. We chatted with them, tried a few other things out. We were like, we didn't try the Ouija board.
No, but they do have like dowsing rods, which we held for a while.
Which was weird.
Yeah. They moved around a lot, but I didn't see any real pattern.
We also tried, I brought a pendulum with us, and we tried the pendulum.
Yep.
But that felt a little weird.
Same
also.
Too. It was difficult to decide whether or not it was like a definitive response.
Yeah, exactly. So we decided, okay, let's go back upstairs. We were pretty tired. It was probably 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning at
yes,
this point.
Definitely. But we did try the Estes method for a while too, and your apps as well.
This was all prior and after the break, we tried all of these things.
Yeah. And the eye oculus, is that what it's called?
Ovulus.
Ovulus. It was pretty cool because it sort of listens and then gives you words that it tries to sort of put together from the static.
Yeah, I don't know if it's supposedly not listening to us, but right. It's just like scanning airwaves
right.
and pulling the words from the radio frequencies or something yep. like that.
So now we want to talk about the results that we got.
They are spooky.
So first and foremost, let's talk about the K2, the EMF readings. And for those of you who don't know, that's electromagnetic frequency.
Or fields or frequency. Listen, I'm not a scientist, people.
I went to college, but not for this.
That's right. All I know is the ghost people say EMF, and I got one. Okay?
You want to know what it means? Go call the fucking ghost guys.
Yeah. Whoever they are.
So anyway,
maybe us someday,
we were using a K2 EMF meter, and we used it exclusively in conjunction with doing interviews with whomever wanted to speak with us. So we were also recording for EVPs.
With three voice recorders.
A lot.
Yeah.
So the EMF meter was active throughout the night, and it was sort of the most exciting part of our night, to be completely honest.
I agree. It seemed to only be interacting and going off in response to questions. However, it wasn't, like, translatable. Because it was going off so much that we couldn't decipher when it was, like, stopping or starting. You know, we kind of kicked off the session by being like, if the answer is yes, please touch this device and the light will go off.
Right.
If the answer is no, please don't touch it.
Exactly.
And the fucking thing just was going off almost nonstop, but only when we were asking questions. And if we, like, were listening back to some of our recordings, the thing would stop.
Exactly. And I would say, we mentioned this before, but it's worth repeating, that it almost exclusively went off in response to questions that were directed to Andrew, which was sort of exciting because it felt like a real result in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, just to piggyback off of Aaron's description of how frequently it was going off, there would be times where we would say, please flash for yes. And it would flash, you know, up to the yellow light just once, very polite little, yes, I'm here. And I think that there were a couple of situations where I felt like we triggered it going off nonstop. And for example, the one that's notable to me is when I asked Andrew, can you tell us about your relationship with your family? And it just started going buck wild.
Yep.
So we did spend some time in the bottom floor speaking with some other people staying at the house. And we did bring the EMF reader with us. And we had it with us also when we were using the pendulum,
mm-hmm.
also doing interviews. And it wasn't really going off down there.
Yeah, and we were trying dowsing rods. As Amanda mentioned, we were trying the pendulum, and we weren't getting great results from either of those either.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not totally, like, surprised that also the meter wasn't going off.
No, but as soon as we returned upstairs to Andrew and Abigail's bedroom, it did start up with the activity.
And this was something that I was kind of testing for too. I was like, well, is it our phones?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Is it something in this room? So I kind of carried it around the room and it didn't seem to go off in a particular spot. In fact, when I picked it up and was just kind of walking around, it didn't go off at all. We waved our phones over it. It did go off when we got a text.
Right.
So we actually turned our phones off.
Yes.
So I feel like we were pretty diligent about trying to make sure that the fact that it was going off was actually for some unknown reason. It wasn't something that we were doing or something that was in the room.
As much as we drink when we're talking to you, oh, listeners, we don't drink when we're investigating
ghosts.
That's
right. It's serious fucking business. We had actually gotten a tip leading into the investigation that we would get a lot of responses if we were polite.
Yes.
If we, you know, addressed everybody with, hello, sir, thank you so much for hosting us in your beautiful home. We would love to speak with you if you would be so inclined.
Yes. Thank you for every answer you've given us so far. If you have the energy and the time to do so.
Which I think in general is a good tip for all ghost hunting.
100%.
Like, one of my pet peeves with ghost shows is those folks that are like, answer me now.
Right. Or like, let's
fucking yelling.
Poke them into coming out. Yeah. Like, it's not, you know, let's remember that if these things exist, they were once people. Mm-hmm. And come on, people are people too.
People are people, in fact.
Guess what? I got some fucking news for y'all. So those were sort of our results on the EMF reader. And while they felt significant in the absence of corroboration on the EVP recordings, they would mean nothing. So let's talk about EVPs.
Dun, 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 la, 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 la. I will say we recorded for a long ass fucking time. Probably not as long as the quote unquote professionals, but we did record for 3 hours into the wee morning hours.
It's true.
I was exhausted by the end of it.
It is important to note, since we're talking about timeline here, that in a lot of our recordings, like we mentioned before, you can hear other people moving around and talking. And so by 1 a.m, 2 a.m, we were pretty accustomed to what it sounds like when somebody above us or in the room next to us is speaking at a normal volume, as opposed to somebody going up and down the stairs outside of our bedroom,
right,
or somebody flushing a toilet from somewhere in the house. So it's not a big house and there weren't a lot of people there. So we encountered every bit of environmental noise you could during the night, and so we were able to identify it by the end of the night and say, nope, actually that's just another person being loud.
Right. And we were even able to do that at the time of the recording. We were calling it out. We were saying, oh, that's someone talking in the hall.
Right.
And actually that was really useful, not only for us just to listen back and know that that's what that was, but actually to compare it to the voices that we did get that we can't explain.
Right. We were able to identify what was environmental and what could not absolutely have been environmental whatsoever. So let's talk about our results on the EVPs.
Yes. Should we talk about it or should we just pull up some files and listen to it?
Let's pull up some files.
Mm-hmm. So we've been asking questions for a little while now,
mm-hmm.
and Amanda asks,
can you tell me about your relationship with your family?
And here's what we hear.
Can you tell us about your relationship with your family?
You hear that, listeners? That was resounding, I can.
I can. And like Amanda mentioned earlier, we were able to kind of A-B compare between voices that we actually know we heard in the hallway or upstairs or in another room mm-hmm. to that voice.
Right.
And the quality is not the same.
And on top of that, remember, when we were out wandering the house, there were only 2 other people awake at that time, and they went to bed before us. So while this could possibly have been somebody else talking in the house, by our judicious research, consideration, etc., we are pretty convinced that this is not something else going on in the house.
Yeah. I mean, if we had been sharing a wall with a male,
mm-hmm.
maybe I would have been more skeptical of it. But we were sharing a wall with a 13-year-old girl who had gone to bed at 10 p.m.
Right.
So no explanation.
No.
That I can really. I mean, granted, I'm not walking away from that being like, we've got a ghost.
Oh, totally. No, that's not proof whatsoever. But remember, too, that that is the question that triggered like a blast of K2 EMF readings.
Right.
So, you know, we get this, you know, albeit a very quiet whispered response in conjunction with the EMF reader, we're inclined to pay some attention to it.
That's right.
So that was just the appetizer, though.
So as we had come back upstairs from chatting with these people downstairs, we go upstairs, we're setting back up, we're getting ready. We've already got a couple of recorders going, and Amanda is trying to go put a recorder in the spooky room, that adjacent room that gives us both the fucking creeps.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're setting back up, we hear...
Remove.
In fact, you may have missed that, ladies and gentlemen, because I am actually talking over it. We did not hear this live at all. Of course, we didn't hear the other one either, but the other one was more of a whisper This, in the recording, sounds very much like someone's talking in the hallway.
Right. Why don't we play it again for you?
Let's play it one more time.
The move.
So you're going to notice here, at least I'm hoping you're noticing, that the volume of that male voice is much, much higher than the whisper that we heard in the last clip. So take into account everything that we've told you already. We're in a house with paper-thin walls. So yes, we're going to be able to hear other people's voices through the walls. However, this recording came at 2 a.m. We already know what it sounds like to have somebody's voice come through the walls. A, we would have noticed it, and B, it would not have occurred on that recording at such a large volume. It would have sounded a little bit more like a faraway voice.
Right. And just so y'all know, I'm saying remove because that word had popped up on that Ovilus app as well. So I am totally oblivious. I'm like reading random things that are popping up. Amanda's going to go set up something. We're just like kind of getting our bearings together.
Right.
And we hear again, we're going to play it one more time.
Mm-hmm. Remove.
What we hear is, I'm going to go talk to some guests in here.
I'm nervous.
That's what we hear.
I'm going to go talk to some guests in here.
Although we're not sure. They could be saying, I'm going to go fuck with some guests in here.
Right. Well, we thought maybe that Andrew was a little bit more polite than that.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to go with talk to. So now that we've told you what we think we're hearing, we'll play it one last time.
The move.
I heard it.
You heard it. It happens at the very beginning, and yeah. I talk right over us. When they're saying here, I'm talking right over it, totally oblivious to it.
So, yeah, above everything else, to me, the most compelling part is the volume that has to be, it cannot be ignored.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the extent of our results. Some interesting EMF readings, some very interesting EVP readings.
We got nothing on photos.
We've got nothing on photos, nothing on video. So while I'm glad we got something, because otherwise I think we would be here tonight like, is this worth all this fucking effort?
Right.
We've got enough to keep us interested.
Definitely.
And
I can also say, too, that we had enough intuitive responses. Like, you know, okay, so harkening back to the other episodes that you've heard from us, you know that I'm a little bit of a scaredy cat. I was surprisingly calm during this investigation. I felt surprisingly comfortable in the room that we were going to sleep in that belonged to the two people who were murdered in that house. Like,
yeah.
It was a comforting environment. And so any of the willies or the intuition I felt, I was really inclined to pay attention to. And so, like we mentioned earlier, we had, you know, the extra bedroom off of Andrew and Abigail's bedroom. Neither of us wanted to step foot in there. I several times forced Aaron to go in there without me because I didn't want to go in myself. Because you know what? I'm fucking selfish.
That's okay. I also just am like, fuck it, I'll do it.
I'll do it.
I also, side note, there's a little fun thing in the basement that if you ever go there, you should go check it out. It's not a paranormal thing, but it's more like an interesting thing that the tour guides usually say, like, go take a photo in this corner. Mm-hmm. They were like, the last person, whoever's brave enough, the last person gets to turn out the lights. And I totally was waiting in the basement for everybody to take these photos and get the fuck out of there because I wanted to be the last one to turn
out
the lights.
As soon as they said that, I made sure I was the first person to take a photo. I went right upstairs.
Amanda bolted, and I was just like, hurry the fuck up, everybody. I want to turn off the light.
Aaron ended up coming upstairs before everybody was done because she got impatient.
I got impatient.
She's trying to resist turning off the light while they were still down there. Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to be down here if that happens. But yeah, I mean, so consider this. And this is something that kept occurring to me the entire night. This is a house that has a lot of traffic. And it sees a lot of traffic of people who specifically go there to talk to ghosts. And so it might not be surprising or unreasonable that not everybody has an interactive experience with the spirits that live there.
Yeah, we kind of had this feeling the whole night that if there are ghosts there, they were a little busy talking to a lot.
Well,
there's probably people
in
other rooms doing the same
too.
Thing.
And so, you know, it wasn't surprising when we got this recording of somebody possibly saying that he was going to go fuck with some guests.
And also, just so you all know, we did reference earlier that we got this weird, ovulous response. I think what we were asking at the time was something like, well, okay, just so you all know, we didn't mention this earlier, but we did open the investigation with almost like a little prayer chant. Not chant, but like an opening.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, we're here to learn from you and, you know, for our greater good, please, you know, if there's something here that's not here for our greater good or to pass along some insights, you know, that's come bother somebody else.
Go fuck off.
And actually, Amanda, because I love you, you said the most amazing thing, and I'm relaying this now. You go, please do not touch us. We are women of the 90s. And that is not okay.
My mom pretty much taught me to say that when I was like 4. That's where that phrase comes from.
So we had said this kind of opening statement, and the ovulus says, prayer, strange.
Oh.
And we tried to ask, what's strange about it? Who is this that we're talking to? And it says, Edna. And we were like, is it trying to say Emma, the sister? And then we ask something like, who are we talking to?
Uh-huh.
Trying to again, because it said Edna.
Yes.
Who are we talking to? It says, yourself. Geek. Like, seriously, the timestamp is 30 seconds later after it says yourself. 30 seconds later, it says geek.
I love it. You can tell we were at this for so long and it was so late in the night that when these were happening, it was almost like, I mean, I can speak for myself only. I wasn't putting those messages together. I was like, this is random. This isn't like a conversation that we're happening. But now that we're reviewing it right now, I'm like, what?
So, yeah, it was fun.
It was.
I would highly recommend anyone who is interested in this sort of thing, if you're in the Fall River area, check it out.
But so let's end on a really productive note. Like, what would we do differently next time? And what will we do differently? Because you can expect to hear more episodes like this from us. Something that I want to do in the future, and this might take some time, is work on our visual evidence. Because, I mean, for a first investigation, our audio evidence is kind of on fleek. I think that's what the kids say.
I mean, this is the first time we've done this. We've got audio, quote unquote evidence, but I mean, we got something.
Right. And I also want to rely a little bit less on the EMF.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I had a big emotional, like triumphant response to seeing that thing light up.
Sure.
And I want to make sure in the future it doesn't distract us from like actually working towards like getting those answers on the EVP, etc.
Yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, I want to be better about figuring out what I want to ask. Because in the moment, you know, I tried to prepare questions, but in the moment I was kind of like, throw them away. And then I'm there and I felt like I didn't know what to say.
Right.
So some additional prep around questioning I want to do.
Yeah.
And I also want to do a better job at positioning the video and visual evidence stuff.
Yeah.
We set up that trail cam.
Not just about the environment, but also just about our first investigation.
Right. And we set up the trail cam, and then after the fact, we realized it wasn't positioned really well. It should have been, like, right on our bed, not in that spooky room shooting out to our bed. Like, we should have done something differently there. So a little bit smarter about positioning of some of our footage.
But yeah, you know, I think we did a lot of things right, and I think that we have a good path to sort of walk on going forward.
Yeah, and I, you know, as we've said before, we're excited to take y'all on this journey with us, and that's what these specials are going to be. These are going to be our investigation specials, and we're just going to recap to you what we've learned and what we did and what we're going to do differently.
Yep.
So we hope you enjoy them. We hope that you learn something from them.
Well, and we hope that you interact and get excited if you want us to investigate someplace. If you yourself have experienced things in your own home and want us to come stay with you, listen, we're never going to turn down a free night somewhere.
That's right. And also my advice, again, I'm a novice, but my general like feeling on this stuff is to not be afraid. In fact, the fear is what makes it more dangerous. So approach these things with intrigue, with respect, but own them and know that you are the person in control.
Yes, definitely. You can tell them what you feel comfortable with, and you can set those boundaries early on and maintain them throughout the night.
And this opinion may change if I feel like my boundaries are not being respected. But hopefully we never get to that point. And if we do get to that point, I will report back. But my general from people on the streets, where, again, we get most of our information, you have to...
We're street people.
We're street people. You have to fucking own this shit. And you have to feel confident about it. Otherwise, that's when shit goes wrong.
Well, and it's not going to be fun if you're scared the whole time.
Exactly. Although it is kind of fun to be scared.
Oh, just a little bit. Speak for yourself. So on that note, we're going to leave it there. And you're going to hear from us again soon. This has been the Midnight Society.
Boop, boop, boop.
Don't touch us. We're women of the 90s.
Women of the 90s.
90s.
Beautiful.